Studio 360.
The MacArthur Foundation just released its annual list of winners of its genius grants. Among them is the writer Jesmyne Ward, whom I spoke with in 2011. She had just published a novel called Salvage the Bones, about a fictional town on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi called Bois Sauvage. Jesmyne was not well known at the time, but as it turned out, Salvage the Bones was about to win the National Book Award for Fiction. She began our sit-down by reading an excerpt from Salvage the Bones, where the book's 15-year-old narrator and her family are preparing for a hurricane.
If one of Daddy's drinking buddies had asked what he's doing tonight, he would have told them he's fixing up for the hurricane. It's summer, and when it's summer, there's always a hurricane coming or leaving here. Each pushes its way through the flat gulf to the 26-mile man-made Mississippi beach, where they knock against the old summer mansions with their slave galleys turned guest houses before running over the bayou, through the pines, to lose wind, drip rain, and die in the north. Most don't even hit us head-on anymore. Most turn right to Florida or take a left for Texas, brush past and glance off us like a shirt sleeve. We ain't had one come straight for us in years, time enough to forget how many jugs of water we need to fill, how many cans of sardines and potted meat we should stock, how many tubs of water we need. But on the radio that Daddy keeps playing in his parked truck, I heard them talking about it earlier today. How the forecasters said the 10th tropical depression had just dissipated in the Gulf, but another one seems to be forming around Puerto Rico. So today, Daddy woke me up by hitting the wall outside me and Junior's room. Wake up. We got work to do. Junior rolled over in his bed and curled into the wall. I sat up long enough to make Daddy think I was going to get up, and then I lay back down and drifted off. When I woke up 2 hours later, Daddy's radio was running in his truck. Junior's bed was empty, his blanket on the floor. Junior, get the rest of them shine jugs. Daddy, ain't none under the house. Outside the window, Daddy jabbed at the belly of the house with his can of beer. Junior tugged his shorts. Daddy gestured again, and Junior squatted and slithered under the house. The underside of the house didn't scare him like it had always scared me when I was little. Junior disappeared between the cinder blocks holding up the house for afternoons and would only come out when Skeeter threatened to send China under there after him. I asked Junior one time what he did under there, and all he would say is that he played. I imagined him digging sleeping holes like a dog would, laying on his back in the sandy red dirt and listening to our feet slide and push across floorboards. Junior had a good arm, and bottles and cans rolled out from under the house like pool balls. They stopped when they hit the rusted over cow bath Daddy had salvaged from the junkyard where he scraps metal. He'd bought it home for Junior's birthday last year and told him to use it as a swimming pool. Shoot, Randall said. He was sitting on a chair under his homemade basketball goal, a rim he'd stolen from the county park and screwed into the trunk of a dead pine tree. Ain't nothing hit us in years. They don't come this way no more. When I was little, they was always hitting us.
That's Jesmyne Ward reading from her novel Salvage the Bones. So how did you go from Katrina hitting you to making it the basis of this novel?
It took me a few years to commit to writing about the hurricane. I think that the hurricane was so awful and so devastating that it actually silenced me for a while. So it wasn't until around like 2007 that I decided that I wanted to tackle the hurricane in fiction. And even then, when I began writing the novel, I didn't actually call the hurricane in the novel Hurricane Katrina until when I was halfway through the novel. And then I thought, this is stupid. I know which storm I'm writing about. Yeah. I should call it Hurricane Katrina.
And you at that moment were no longer living on the Gulf Coast. Describe how you came to be there during the hurricane.
So I was attending the University of Michigan, and I had just finished up my MFA program in fiction, but I was scheduled to return to Ann Arbor late August to begin teaching. But because I'm always so homesick, I thought, well, you know, I'll just stay here, you know, until the last moment. Like, I'll stay here through the hurricane And then I'll, you know, drive up to Michigan because I totally underestimated the storm. And then we didn't know that it was a Category 5 until the night before it hit, you know, and it hit early in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so I just didn't know what I was doing. I totally underestimated it.
And what was it like for you and your family as you experienced it?
It was terrifying. It was, you know, my mom lives in a trailer, which you can never stay in trailers during a hurricane. So we spent the night at my grandmother's house. And then when we woke up at like 6, 7 a.m., the storm was there. And then all of a sudden, water was inside the house, and her house had never flooded before. And we'd been over there, you know, for like countless, you know, sort of hurricanes, lesser storms. Mm-hmm. And then the water rose very, very quickly. And the water rose so quickly that we were afraid that we would drown inside the house. And we didn't want to climb into the attic because we didn't want to climb into the attic and drown. So we actually had to leave the house during the middle of the storm. And a lot of our cars were washed away. So we got into the trucks that had escaped the flood. And we were trying to make it to the local church, but we weren't able to make it there. And so we actually sat in a field, a high field, for a large portion of the storm until the water receded enough so that we could drive a little further. But still then we couldn't get to the church. And some of us were rescued by some neighbors that had a boat. Some of us were able to make it in our trucks a little later. And we were taken in by a family for the rest of the storm.
So it sounds just about as scary as the storm as that you fictionalized in Salvage the Bones.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
The heroine and narrator is a 15-year-old girl named Esh, who lives in this house of men. Her mother had died in childbirth a few years earlier, and is a serious reader. She mentions having just read As I Lay Dying. She refers a lot, recurringly, to Greek gods and goddesses, which is not, you know, being this incredibly literate girl at 15 is not the character you would expect this poor girl in a small town in the Gulf Coast to be. Was that part of who she would be for you from the beginning?
When I sort of discovered, I knew that she would be reading over the summer. Like, I knew that she read because I figured that she read in order to not be so isolated, right? Mm-hmm. And so I knew that she would do well in English classes, and she would take her assignments seriously, and she would do them during the summer. But then, you know, as I wrote the novel, she surprised me with how much she identified with those characters from the myths and how she attached to the character of Medea, and saw something of that character in herself and how that troubled her. She saw something of herself in those myths. And was able to sort of refer to them to try to understand her existence and try to make sense of what she was dealing with during that time.
Is Esh at 15 a little bit like you at 15, a lot like you at 15? How does she compare?
Because she was a reader and because she was using books to escape. In that way, I think that she reflects me at 15. But then, and all the other, you know, in how promiscuous she is and how she sort of sees the world and navigates the world, I think that she's very much her own character. But I do think that her love of books is, there's a little bit of me in there at 15.
You must have always been the smart kid in town, right?
I was always the smart kid. You know, it's funny because, you know, when I graduated from high school, I was a smart kid who was applying to all these Ivy League
fancy
big
colleges,
schools. Yeah, fancy colleges to go to school. But like, I think back to even when I was in elementary school and, you know, and I would get teased and kids would call me a bookworm. So that stigma of being the smart kid has been with me from the beginning.
You call this town Bois Sauvage, which means wild wood, which has a kind of mythological ring, as if these children, these teenagers, are living a kind of Lord of the Flies existence. Was that intentional, that there's a sort of fabulistic quality?
Originally, actually, the name Bois Sauvage, I took it from my first book, I'm writing about a fictionalized version of the place that I grew up, which is named DeLille, right? Mm-hmm. But DeLille is the second name for the town. The first name for the town, before it was named for a French settler, it was called Wolftown. And so that's actually why I came up with the French name Bois Sauvage, because one of the, I think that one of the meanings for Sauvage can actually be wolf. Huh. And so I wanted that name to sort of reflect the history of the town that I come from.
So you read a lot as a kid, but at what point did you decide, I really want to be a writer?
Honestly, it was after my brother died. I actually sort of graduated from high school in Mississippi, and then I attended college at Stanford University, which Stanford University is a great university, but because of my background, you know, I come from a poor black rural community. I was totally overwhelmed at Stanford, and I thought that I did not belong there. And that doubt regarding, you know, like my, you know, intelligence followed me throughout my time there. And so I didn't commit to being a writer while I was there because I thought, I took like one fiction class and I just thought that I wasn't good enough. And I never spoke in class and, you know, I struggled the entire time. But it wasn't until I graduated from Stanford, and I still harbored that sort of secret dream of being a writer. And I graduated from Stanford, and then the year after I graduated from Stanford, during that year, that's when my younger brother died. He was 19. He was hit by a drunk driver. And that changed everything for me because, you know, he taught me an important lesson that it's so cliche, but you know we're not promised anything, and that we can die at any time, and that I realized that, and I was sort of living with that loss every day, and with that realization every day, because I loved them and I missed them so much, and I thought, well, what could I do with my life that if I did die in like a month or a year or tomorrow or whenever, that I would feel like I'd lived a life worth living, and I'd done something that makes me happy and that serves some purpose. And then I thought, writing, like, that's what I want to do. I want to be a writer. And so, you know, like I sort of went against my better judgment, you know, which told me that I should attempt to, you know, study for the LSAT and go to law school or find a more practical profession. And I decided to commit to writing, and that's when I began applying to MFA programs.
Do you, living in Northern California and Ann Arbor, Michigan, do you miss the South? And if so, what do you miss about it?
I do miss the South. You know, while I was in those places, this is going to sound strange, but I missed the air. You know, it's very humid.
You talk about it. There's a lot of humidity in this book.
Yes, yes, and it's hot. And I found that when I was in the South, and I think it's partly because it's where I'm from, and I have a very large extended family in DeLille, and I have a community where, you know, everyone knows everyone, and everyone's been living there forever. And so I think that, you know, that I missed that, but that I sort of associated that close-knit, tight feeling with the feeling of humidity and heat, because when you're in that kind of humidity, it feels like the air is embracing you. It's so heavy and so thick. I mean, there's a lot that even as I love Mississippi, there's a lot that I dislike about Mississippi. There's much that I hate about Mississippi, but, you know, that's home. So, yeah.
But you, on the other hand, you presumably wouldn't have become who you've become, a well-regarded novelist and the rest, had you not left, right?
Exactly. Because it taught me, you know, being away from home, I think, helped me to commit to writing about it when I did, partly maybe because I was sort of writing into that homesickness because I missed it so much and thinking so much about home and, like, my place there and if I could have a place there. It helped me see things more clearly, and it helped me sort of, I guess, like more easily embrace the love that I felt for that place and for those people.
Jessamyn Ward, thank you very much for coming into Studio 360 today.
Thank you for having me.
Jessamyn Ward's third novel, Sing Unburied, Sing, is just out.
And it is a finalist for this year's National Book Award for Fiction.